Welcome to Shiur Ksava Kabbalah Parshas Tetzaveh. As we know, Parshas Tetzaveh spends a good deal of time describing the Big Day Kahuna, the various different garments which were worn particularly by the Kohen Gadol. One of those garments, as we know, is the Choshen Mishpat, is the breastplate which the Kohen Gadol would wear. And in Perek Chav Ches Pasuk Lamed, after the Torah describes how the Choshen Mishpat was made, the pasuk says, "V'nosata el choshen ha-mishpat," you should place into the choshen mishpat es ha-urim ve'es ha-tumim. You should place the urim and the tumim. V'hayu alev arah b'bar lufnei Hashem, and they should be on Aaron's heart, or the Kohen Gadol's heart, when he comes in, when he enters before Hashem. What are the urim v'tumim? So Rashi writes, "Huksav shem ha-mufurash." This is the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu written out on a piece of parchment or the like. Shahaya nosno besoch kiflei hachoshen. He would place this divine name into the folds of the choshen. And she'al yado hu meir dvarav umetamim es dvarav. And the reason that this piece of parchment with God's name on it was referred to as the Urim V'Tumim was because it would enlighten the eyes of the Kohen Gadol, who would ask the Choshen Mishpat for various forms of advice. In other words, as a vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu could communicate to the Kohen Gadol, and the words of the Choshen Mishpat would always be found to be Tumim. They would always be found to be perfect on the mark. In other words, it would be an accurate way of communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rashi then adds, "Uvamikdash sheni hoya hachoshen." During the second Beit HaMikdash, there was indeed a choshen mishpat. In other words, the Kohen Gadol had a choshen mishpat. Sheyesh the Kohen Gadol yos mechusar begadim, because after all, the Kohen Gadol cannot serve if he's lacking even one of the articles of clothing. Aval also Hashem lo haya b'socho. But as the Gemara says in Yuma, the Urim v'Tumim was not operative, it was not present during the second Beis HaMikdash. So what that means, says Rashi, is that the Choshen was there, but this name of Hashem, which was slipped into the folds of the Choshen, was not there during the second Beis HaMikdash. But when the Gemara talks about the Urim v'Tumim being absent during the second Beis HaMikdash, it can't mean that there was no Choshen altogether, because then again, the Kohen Gadol, in that case, would not be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash altogether.
Missing the name wasn't a lack, or something lacking in...
Right, so apparently what you see is that the Choshen is complete even without the Shem Hashem that's in it. Again, it's not able to function on the highest level, but it's still considered to be the Choshen, even absent this name. So the Ksav HaKabbalah quotes most of this Rashi, where Rashi describes how the Urim V'Tumim is the Shem Hashem which is placed into the folds of the Choshen. V'chein pirshu kol mefarshim. As the Ksav HaKabbalah, the other Mefarshim explains similarly, V'Ramban ha'inyan mevu'ar yosef. If you look in the Ramban, he says, the Ramban goes at length to describe exactly the details of how the Shem Hashem was placed into the Choshen. V'harbe tomati shlomo sosti v'divri ha'Rambam klum. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, what really bothers me is that if you look in the Rambam's description of the Choshen Mishpah, there's absolutely no reference to this Shem Hashem which is placed into the folds of the Choshen Mishpat, which after all seems to be such an essential part of what the Choshen Mishpat is all about.
Yeah. Sorry. The Choshen Mishpat.
The breastplate. Right.
What's the Mishpat?
The breastplate of judgment. So in other words, it's a good question. Let's say to keep it simple that this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates things, to Klal Yisrael, and makes his mishpat, makes his judgment known. It's a good question. That's not an adequate answer, but let's go with that for the time being. So the Rambam eliminates any reference to a Shem Hashem placed in the folds of the Choshen. Ki beperek tes melchus klei mikdash shemavar shtam koprati maise Choshen ba'efod. The Rambam talks about the makings of the Eifod and the Choshen in the ninth chapter of Ochus Klei Mikdash. Lo hisker klal mi'urim v'tumim. And he doesn't say anything about the Urim v'tumim or a Shem Hashem that's placed into the Choshen or the like. Ve'eich yishamit mikra mufurash. So what are you going to say? The Rambam doesn't hold of the Urim v'tumim? So machlokas, Sefer Shmos and the Rambam? I mean, clearly that's not true. Right? So if the Pasuk is black on white talking about the Urim v'tumim, how does the Rambam have no reference to it in his description of the Choshen Mishpat whatsoever? Lachain nirali. It therefore appears to me as follows. Diladaito ein Urim v'tumim shemos kedoshim kedas hamafarshim. The Rambam says the Ksav HaKabbalah has a fundamentally different definition of what the Urim v'tumim are. And he does mention them, except you don't realize it. The Urim v'tumim are not a Shem Hashem which is slipped into the folds of the Choshen, but rather Rak Shem Asar Ho'avonim Shayiksuvim B'Shmol Shem Asar Shivtei Yisrael, the 12 stones of the breastplate upon which the names of the Shvatim, the names of the tribes, are written, Heim Atzmon Kiron HaKosav Kan B'Shem Urim v'tumim. Those stones, according to the Rambam, are the definition of the Urim v'tumim. The Urim v'tumim, according to this, is not something distinct from the Choshen, which is placed into the Choshen, but rather it's the description of the stones of the Choshen themselves. Kihem atzmon hayu meirim utzmimim b'divreyem b'blitas osi osem elanish al bohem. And the truth is, if we go with what Rashi told us a moment ago, that the reason the Urim v'tumim are called Urim v'tumim is because they enlighten the eyes of the Kohen Gadol who asks the question, and they are perfect and accurate in their answers. So the object which actually communicated information to the Kohen Gadol was not the Shemos, it was not the name of Hashem which was slipped into the folds of the Choshen, it was the stones themselves. Again, the Gemara describes how the letters on the stones would light up in some kind of supernatural way. They would spell out words, and the Kohen Gadol would be able to interpret the words. In other words, the actual source of the information, that which was Meir V'tumim, that which really deserves the name Urim V'tumim, is the stones themselves. According to Rashi and all of the other Mefarshim, it's a little bit odd, in fact, that the Shem Hashem is referred to as the Urim V'tumim, because in a sense, that's not actually the Urim V'tumim. In a modern-day idiom, you would say that was maybe the battery that enabled the Urim V'tumim to function. But the Urim V'tumim, that which was lit up and that which was accurate in conveying its ideas, that those were the stones of the Choshen. At least that's how we understand from the Rambam. So, Menela, we understand why the Rambam doesn't need to spend time discussing, you know, a separate thing called the Urim V'tumim. The Urim V'tumim, in a sense, are part of the Choshen. They're the very makeup of the Choshen itself. And according to the Rambam, it comes out in the Ksav HaKabbalah's understanding, there was no Shem Hashem which was placed into the folds of the Choshen.
So according to the Rambam, what was absent?
Oh, so very good. So, you know, this may work in the Rambam, but it raises a whole host of questions in the Psukim as well as in Chazal. I mean, again, just to take the let's start with the pasuk for a moment. It says, "Venosato el choshen amishpat es haurim v'satumim." You should place into the choshen the urim v'tumim. So, if we're talking about something being placed into the folds, okay, you know, the language makes sense. If we're talking about the stones, it's a little bit less obvious how you interpret that pasuk. Number one. Okay, good. Okay, so let's see how he develops it. Plus, you have to explain that Maimer Chazal that Rashi quoted, that the Urim V'tumim were absent during the second Beis HaMikdash. Rashi makes a point of saying it can't be that the Choshen was missing, right? Because if the Choshen was missing, you know, so then the Kohen Gadol would not be able to serve altogether. So again, all these things, you know, assuming that the Ksav HaKabbalah's pshat in the Rambam is correct, then we have to, you know, go back and explain how all these things are going to work. So let's go one step at a time. Venerally owed, Dimilvad Lisibas Tulosteam Aniflas those Pichuvas Hanisho Bohen, Hunachaleam Shem Urim Vitumim, Kigamitsad at Smuston, Yitochen Aleam Shem Zet. Ki Avonim Tobos Kaelum Itibim Leos Zach Ubahir Umeir, Lohe Nikra Umim Urim, Rostalomar Bale Or. So let's stop there for a moment. Says the Daksava Kabbalah, by the way, if we're going to go with this interpretation, that the Urim and Tumim refers to the stones, so besides the fact that the stones were the source of enlightenment, Urim, and they were always on the mark, Tumim, it's also appropriate to call them Urim v'Tumim just based on their physical composition, not necessarily based on what they do, but just the physical makeup of the stones. In what way? Well, Urim means the ones that cause light. Now, up until now, we've understood that to mean that they are enlightening stones. They enlighten us, you know, they light up, and they also, you know, enlighten the questioner as to, you know, they give him information, how he should proceed. But on the most basic of levels, says Daksava Kabbalah, you could also interpret the word Urim as meaning shining. These are beautiful stones, they're jewels. And as we know, or maybe as we don't know, you know, jewels shine. You know, they're shiny stones. So the stones can be referred to as Urim just on a very, very simple level, because they give off light in a very basic physical sense. They're shiny. So that's one thing. They're also called Tumim on a very basic physical level in the following sense. Gam ho'avorim ho'eila nilkuchu l'choshen kibriyusim ativi. These stones that were used for the choshen were unmarred. They were taken in their natural form and placed in their natural form into the choshen itself. And he goes on to explain. Lo shalat aleihem yad ha'chotzim v'poslim. No artisan touched up or marred the beautiful, perfect surface of the stones in any way.
It was perfect, or it was natural. It can't be broken, can it?
Okay, so one second. Let's see. As the Ramban writes, Avnei Achosh Nikru Avnei Miluim. The stones of the Choshen were referred to as Avnei Miluim. Now, what does Avnei Miluim mean? On the simple level, we say Miluim means that which fills up the Choshen, from the word Male. In other words, there was a hole in the Choshen. You place the stone into the hole. But says the Ramban, not the Targum writes that Avnei Miluim means Avnei Shleimusa, perfect stones. Miluim in the sense that they were full, not that they filled something up, but they were full in their character. Shahayu Shleimim, they were totally perfect. Well, next to the massive Gadol, it's not as if they were quarried from some very big rock, and then, you know, they were chopped up into little rocks. This is how they existed in nature. Right? They were found in nature this way. And they were not modified in any way. So you'll ask me, wait a minute, what do you mean they weren't modified in any way? There was writing on the stones. Right? How did the writing get to be on the, you know, you tell me, oh, it's natural. So they engraved words on the stones.
Were the stones given by the Nisim? Didn't they come down miraculously from
okay.
the Mayim to the Nisim?
Okay, so were they came down with the letters written on them already?
Sure, but they came down perfect.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So that's number one. In other words, if they're coming from the Nisim, right? By Nisim, Heviu Esav Ne'ashoam, right? And they came down in some kind of miraculous fashion, so they were taka, you know, perfect from nature. But what about the writing? How can you say they were untouched and yet they had engraving on them? How do those two things go together? So he writes, Gam Ksivas Hashemos Aleihem Lo Hayu Ma'aseh Choresh. It's not as if they invited in some engraver to just engrave the names of the Shvatim on the stones. Ka'amran, Havonim Halalu, Ein Kosra Aleim B'Dyo, Ein Mefarshim Aleim B'Ismel. The Gemara says in Sota, they did not ink, you know, the tops of these stones. They did not cut the top of these stones with a knife or anything of that nature. How did they engrave the names of Klal Yisrael on the stones? Elamevi Shomir. They would bring the famous shamir worm, umar lohem, and you would put the shamir next to the stones, and writes the Gemara in Sota, vehein nivkoin me'aleihem. It's not even, you know, we don't always appropriately appreciate the shamir. It's not just as if the shamir was, you know, a very good engraving tool, you know. The shamir almost has supernatural properties. You put the shamir up against the stone, and the portion of the stone that was going to spell out the name of whatever was supposed to be on the stone would sort of implode, would be pushed in a supernatural fashion. It wasn't an engraving sort of act. Again, when you engrave, so, you know, whatever you engrave, a piece of the stone is removed from the stone itself. Here, again, it's something so unique that it's not really comparable to anything in our experience. You know, the name on the stone would just sort of, you know, that portion of the stone would just be depressed. It's almost as if you pushed it down. And, you know, you would engrave in that fashion. So that's not really engraving, says the Daksava Kabbalah. And in a sense, the stone is really perfect and unblemished. It's tumim, in that sense of the term. It exists as it existed in nature. Right? So, you know, that's part of the role of the Shomir. It's not just, wow, you know, the Jews in the Midbar had this really cool tool. You know, they sent away, they had this catalog, and wow, it's unbelievable what you can get. No, it's not just that. The Shomir's presence enabled the stones to really be tzimimim, to be unblemished. So in light of the fact that these stones were exactly the way they were in nature, they were unblemished, nikru tumim, they're called tumim. Tumim refers to the stones. Ratzalomar, shleimim bilti chistar. There's nothing lacking in the stones themselves.
So are the stones thought to empower the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Gadol? Are they thought to be independent of the Kohen Gadol? You know, they have some powers for the klal. What were the stones supposed to actually do?
Right, so Chazal explained that the stones essentially functioned as a kind of an oracle. In other words, that someone would be able to go stand in front of the Kohen Gadol, ask a question. Again, you know, I don't think it's the sort of thing that any Joe could just go in and do this, but again, you know, if it was appropriate, someone would be able to go in front of the Urim V'Tumim, in front of the Choshen Mishpat, ask a question, and the letters on the Choshen Mishpat would light up in such a way that they would convey the answer, like an oracle of sorts. V'nei l'masha pirish Rashi al umi leisa bo miluas even shu milo yo avana begumos hamishu botzos. Im kein choser adayin chiber mishpitzos eila el achoshen. The alzer omar kan venosato el achoshen es to urim vestatumim klomar. Techaber mishpitzos to avonim el achoshen. Vostelomar el arigas chatichas beged hamiruba. Right? So let's go back to this pasuk which we had raised a few moments ago. We spoke about a few moments ago. The pasuk says, "Vinosato el choshen mishpat es urim v'satumim." You should place the urim v'tumim into the choshen mishpat. So we asked, you know, if that's talking about a shem Hashem that's placed into the folds of the choshen. Okay, so I understand the language. You should place this into the choshen mishpat. But if we're talking about the stones are the urim v'tumim, what exactly is meant? So, again, as Shelley said before, the Ksava Kabbalah basically says the same idea, that the stones had to be inserted into the Choshen. The Choshen was made of fabric. It was threads that were threaded together, and there were holes for the stones to go into. The placing of the stones into their holes is what is being referred to v'nosato el choshen hamishpat es ha'urim v'satumim. You should place the stones into the fabric of the choshen mishpat. V'gamim neforesh milas bo shechozer al ha'choshen kolomar shi'emale es ha'choshen bo avonim shetiyeno zo eitzol zo ba'ofen shi ha'choshen memula ba'avonim mikol mokom chozer v'shon ha'kar v'nosato el ha'choshen es ha'urim v'satumim. So if that's the case, though, so then you have the Torah basically saying the same thing twice. If all v'nosato l'choshen es ha'urim v'satumim means is that you should place the stones into the fabric of the choshen, so how is that different from what the Torah said a few psukim back in pasuk yizayin umileitza bo miluas even? You should fill the stones into their appropriate slots in the Choshen. So according to the Aksava Kabbalah, you know, that is the same thing as what's being described over here. So says the Aksava Kabbalah, not to fear, not to worry. You're right, it really is describing the same thing which was described earlier, but it's repeated in order to mark these stones as Urim V'tumim. In other words, before we were just saying they're Evan, they're stones, but now we're pointing out the stones are Urim V'tumim because of these special properties, again, either physical or supernatural, that the stones possess. He then adds, the Omer es ha'urim ve es ha'tumim bekefo milas es. So ask the following question, says Aksava Kabbalah. So urim v'tumim refers to the stones. The stones are both urim and tumim. So why are they referred to as two separate things, the urim and the tumim? Right? In other words, it's not really as if they're two separate items. It's the same item that has two properties. So why don't you just call them in Osato El Ha'aron es Ha'urim Hatumim? Right? I mean, that would really be a more appropriate thing. Now, the truth is, this is a kasha not only on the Ksava Kabbalah's reading of the Rambam, that the Urim Hatumim are the stones. It's really a kasha on everyone. You know, on the understanding that the Urim Hatumim are a Shem Hashem, which is placed into the fold of the Choshen. Because here too, Urim and Tumim is not two separate things. It's one item that has two qualities to it. You know, so how do you understand that? Don't be bothered by that, says the Aksava Kabbalah. Kikam be'etzem echad mitzanu kafu. We sometimes find that one item can be referred to, you know, with a double S, even though it's one item. So he quotes as an example when Avraham Avinu was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kachna es bincha, es yichidcha, right? Take now your son, your only one. Now, even though there's a different S, the word S is used twice, es bincha, es yichidcha, it's only one person who's being referred to, it's Yitzchak, right? But sometimes for emphasis, the S can be repeated. Ukrom avne miluim lahoros hashlei muslim kibriyosam bilti yischasu klum lachein tola bohem os heya yedia ha'urim hatumim. Right, because we want to stress the special quality of these stones which have already been mentioned, they're referred to with the definite article the hey ha'urim hatumim. And you know, that's appropriate to make reference to over here. And what the Ksava Kabbalah doesn't address is the Vav, which on the surface you would think is the bigger kasha, again, not only against his interpretation, but really against any interpretation. Es ha'urim ve'es ha'tumim. In other words, in the example with Yitzchak, where Yitzchak is referred to as es bincha, es yechidcha, there's no Vav. Right, you know. So, in other words, the understanding is bincha yechidcha is the same person. Es ha'urim ve'es ha'tumim. The vav causes one to think that these are two, you know, different things which are being referenced over here. How do you explain the vav? So, the truth is, although he doesn't address this, I think the answer is we find not infrequently in Tanakh that sometimes a vav will be thrown in, even when on the surface it seems to be extraneous. Right, just on Shabbos, this past Shabbos, we were learning in Yechezkel, Perek Mem Zayin. So there's one of those passages in Yechezkel. There's an extra vav which is thrown into the middle of the pasuk, which again doesn't really translate well as "and." And the Mefarshim over there point out, you know, yeah, sometimes for whatever reason, the Tanakh will use an extra vav, you know, even though it doesn't carry the connotation of "and." Right? In this context, I think the way you would explain it is es ha'urim ve'es ha'tumim, meaning it's the same item, but is introduced by a vav to show that it has two separate functions. These stones are urim v'tumim. These stones are both luminous as well as perfect and complete. You know, so even though it's one item and not two separate items, the vav is going to be appropriate. He then adds as follows: Vishina hakasuv ben avnei ha'efo l'vein avnei ha'urim v'atumim. Dibu Eifod Omer Loshim Sfima Vistamto Shtei Avoram Akisvo So Eifod Vikan Omer Vinosato El Ha'orun Es Ha'urim. You know, it's striking. There are two sets of stones that are involved in the Big Day Kohen Gadol. The Eifod has two stones on the shoulders of the Eifod. The Choshen, of course, has the 12 stones which are on the Choshen itself. When discussing the Avnei Shoam, the two stones of the Eifod, it says Visamto, you should place the two stones. When discussing, again, as he understands it according to the Rambam, the 12 stones of the Choshen, it says Vinosato. Right? What's the difference between Visamto versus Vinosato? Offhand, we translate both of them as you should place. So why does the Torah in close proximity use two different verbs for what seems to be the same thing? So he writes as follows. It would seem that Visamto by the Avnei Ha'Eifod means put them there and leave them there. Visamto means put them there permanently. But then he says a tremendous chiddush. Omnam Avnei Ha'urim V'Tumim Lo Hayu Mechubar Bariga Sachoshin Chibur Tmidi Ad She'yosu Shneim Buguf Echad. The Urim V'Tumim, the stones of the Choshen, were removable from the Choshen. That's what the Ksav HaKabbalah wants to suggest, which is tremendous chiddush, right? In other words, put them into the Choshen, but put them in such a way that they can be removed. They were not permanently affixed into the Choshen the way the Avnei Shoam were. Ki im chibur toloi, kishnei gufim nifradim zemizev echad toloi b'chaveira. It was hanging. The stones were hanging onto the Choshen in such a way that they were attached, but they were not put in quite a full fashion. So he says this distinction between the Avnei Shoam of the Eifod and the Avnei Miluim of the Choshen comes out in Parshas Tzav when it describes how the Kohanim were being consecrated. It says that Moshe dressed Aaron HaKohen. It says he put the Eifod on him. And there's no reference to the Avnei Shoam. Why? Because the Avnei Shoam was just part of the Eifod. Once you made the Eifod, so if you dressed him in the Eifod, so Mimelo, he was wearing the Avnei Shoam. But when it describes Aaron HaKohen being dressed in the Choshen, it says you should put on Aaron the Choshen, and then Vayitein el HaChoshen as the Urim v'Satumim, he placed into the Choshen the Urim v'Tumim, meaning the Choshen, when it was placed on Aaron, did not have the stones in it, the way he's understanding. And then the stones were put on afterwards, after he was already wearing it, because again, the connection between the stones and the Choshen was not as strong a connection. Okay, so we're going to we'll pick up. There's a little bit more in this piece, which we'll see by Ezra Hashem after Ma'ariv, and then we'll add on to that a slightly different piece that he has about the bells on the Me'il of the Kohen Gadol and the role, the unique role which they played. Okay. Welcome to the second part of Ksav HaKabbalah, Parshas Tetzaveh. So in the first part we saw how the Aksava Kabbalah notes the fact that the Rambam, when he describes the Choshen Mishpat, does not describe any Shem Hashem being placed into the folds of the Choshen, the way that Rashi and all the Mefarshim understand is implied by the concept of the Urim V'Tumim. So the Ksav HaKabbalah comes out with a very sort of novel interpretation that the Urim V'Tumim, according to the Rambam, means the stones themselves. The stones themselves, the Choshen Mishpat, are referred to as Urim V'Tumim, and in fact there was no Shem Hashem that was placed into the folds of the Choshen. Anyway, and we saw how he explained, you know, how that worked, you know, in terms of the Psukim.
According to this sheet, it was for the second Beis
HaMikdash. Oh, so we'll get to the second Beis HaMikdash in a minute. So, Kei Nirali B'Yishuv Das HaRambam Shehitshmit B'Maisa HaChoshen Inner of Urim V'Tumim. So, in light of all of this, so I think this is the pshat, he says, in the Rambam,
who omits describing the Urim v'Tumim in his description, his lengthy description of the Choshen. After the Rambam has explained how you put the 12 stones into the Choshen, there's no need to mention after that the Urim v'Tumim. The 12 stones are the Urim v'Tumim.
That stuff
should have
been mentioned.
Okay, one second. And in fact, I'll bring you another proof, he says, that according to the Rambam, the 12 stones are the Urim V'Tumim. Because he writes in Perek Yud of Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, Halacha Yud, Asu Bebayis Sheni Urim V'Tumim Kidei Lahashlim Shmona Begadim. In the second Beis HaMikdash period, they made an Urim V'Tumim simply so that they should have all eight clothes, all eight vestments of the Kohen Gadol. Also, one second. The Chaim Kosav, the Perek Dalet, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Halacha Aleph. And he writes similarly in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Dalet, Halacha Aleph. Im ha'yo daito b'urim v'tumim, Hashem ha'mefurosh. If urim v'tumim, according to the Rambam, means that Shem Hashem that Rashi describes as being put into the folds of the Choshen, so you wouldn't need the Shem Hashem in order to make the Choshen and the other Begadim complete. Again, as we pointed out at the very beginning, the Choshen is the Choshen even without the Shem HaMufurash. In other words, the Urim V'Tumim, according to most Mefarshim, is something distinct from the Choshen. It's placed in the Choshen. Here the Rambam clearly labels the Urim V'Tumim as something that's a part of the Choshen itself. They made Urim V'Tumim during the second Beis HaMikdash so that the Begadim shouldn't be incomplete. Meaning, had they not had Urim V'Tumim, what would you have? You'd have a woven breastplate without stones. That's not a breastplate. So they have to put the stones there in order that, you know, they should have the Shmona Begadim. Right? So, V'nei HaKesef Mishnah, Hizkei B'Perish Urim V'Tumim Shehu'Shem HaMufurash. The Kesef Mishnah there in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash writes Urim V'Tumim means the Shem HaMufurish like Rashi. The Chain Hetzik Divrei Asmag Shibabai Yishteini Lohayo B'Choshen Oso Hashem. And the Kesef Mishnah there quotes from the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvah's Gadol, that in the second Beis HaMikdash they did not have that Shem HaMufurish placed into the Choshen Mishpah. Utmehani Shlo Hisorer Klau Al Hashmotas Harambam Inin Urim V'Tumim B'Maisa Achoshen. Right? But I'm astonished, says the Aksava Kabbalah, that the Kesef Mishnah just assumes that the Urim V'Tumim means the same thing for the Rambam that it means for everybody else, without calling our attention to the fact that the Rambam never describes the Urim V'Tumim as being a Shem HaMufurash. The Shadaito Al Karchachod Shlo Kedat HaMufarshim as the Urim V'Tumim Al Shem HaMufurash. It must be that the Rambam is in disagreement with the other Mefarshim. Uvechapsi b'divrei Mefarshi HaTorah Motzosi l'Rav Yitzchok HaBar Benel. Says Aksava Kabbalah, in going through the standard commentaries on the Chumash, I found the following in the Abar Benel. Right? So in other words, again, this is a big chiddush to say, according to the Rambam, that the Urim V'Tumim is the stones themselves. You'd like to see somebody else say that, right? So he says, I found the following in the Abar Benel. There are some of the Chachamim who say, says the Abar Benel, the Abar Benel quotes such an opinion without attributing it to anybody, namely that the stones are the Urim V'Tumim. Who says this? Some of the Chachamim. And then the Abar Benel goes on to say why he doesn't think that's correct. But says the Ksava Kabbalah, it would seem that, you know, although the Abar Benel doesn't attribute this to the Rambam, it would seem that this is in fact the position of the Rambam. So in other words, it's not like we got this out of nowhere. You know, the Abar Benel does quote such a shita, if only to dismiss it. So let's come back to a question that's been raised over the past, you know, period of time. So what does it mean that during the second Beis HaMikdash they didn't have an Urim V'Tumim? Right? So L'chara, what it means, according to the Rambam, is that although they had the stones, you know, they didn't have a real Urim V'Tumim. Meaning, in the first Beis HaMikdash, the stones had these properties by which they served as an oracle. In the second Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have the ability to have the stone serve as an oracle. So what did they do? They made the Choshen and they just put stones in the Choshen. Meaning, and that's what the Rambam means when he says that Otsu Gabay Yisheni Urim V'Tumim Kedei L'Hashlim Shmona Begadim. They didn't really have a real Urim V'Tumim in the sense that they didn't have stones in the Bayis Sheni that would perform all of these incredible things that the stones did during the Bayis Rishon. Okay, so you say, okay, so what's the point? Why have stones in the Choshen altogether if they're not going to have these supernatural qualities? Answers the Rambam, look, but you can't not have a Choshen, because if you don't have stones, you don't have a Choshen. If you don't have a Choshen, the Kohen Gadol can't serve. He's a Mechusar B'Gadim. He doesn't have the right clothing. So they took stones and they stuck them into the Choshen, and maybe they wrote on them the names of the Shvatim and everything like that. So, but it was a fake. In other words, they just had it. It was a knockoff, right? It was the ersatz.
If you have a knockoff, who's to say that's considered a real Choshen?
Right. So apparently, the Rambam holds that it's good enough to be considered a Choshen because it physically has all of the elements of the Choshen. But since metaphysically, it doesn't have the attributes that are associated with the Urim V'Tumim, so it's called Urim V'Tumim, it's called the Choshen, but it's not the real deal in terms of what they had in Bayis Rishon. Yeah, well, look, they had to go and get a stone from Dama ben Nesina's father, right? But that's how you'd understand the Rambam, according to the Aksava Kabbalah. They had the stones, but the stones didn't have the function of the Urim V'Tumim, so therefore, although we can refer to them as an Urim V'Tumim, it's not the real deal, basically, this thing. They're very interesting mahalach. Other Achronim say this mahalach in the Rambam as well, and again, it does really seem to fit, the approach of the Rambam, which will make the Rambam, vastly different than the other Mefarshim and their understanding of what the Urim V'Tumim are all about.
If I'm missing an eschewel, can I take a lemon and put a toothpick on top of it and make that my eschewel because it's not exactly the same, it's not in a raisa, but it fills the purpose for whatever the purpose is supposed to fill.
So I'll tell you the following, it's not exactly the same thing, but the Rishonim do write that if the only access to Dalid Minim that you have is Dalid Minim, which are Pustle, it's worthwhile using them if that's all you got. Again, maybe not with a bracha, but it's worthwhile using them so that people shouldn't forget about the mitzvah of Dalid Minim. Again, that's not exactly what's going on over here, because clearly the Choshen Mishpat that had the stones in it did have the din of a Choshen Mishpat. Right? The Kohen Gadol Midaraisa was allowed to serve in the Mikdash with this Choshen Mishpat with, non-functioning Avonim, but so it's not exactly the same thing, but apparently you're allowed to do that, at least in this case. It's called the Choshen, even though the Avonim are not doing what they're supposed to do. Right? Now, that property of the Avonim, is not essential to the Choshen being called the Choshen. That's what you see from here, according to his interpretation of the Rambam. I think it does. In other words, it doesn't have the same powers. It's a real deal. It has Kedusha's Big Day Kahuna, because otherwise the Kohen Gadol would not be able to use it. It's just it doesn't have the full, does not have the powers associated with the regular Urim V'Tumim. But to say that has Kedusha, as if it has the Kedusha of the regular Urim V'Tumim. I want to just mention one other idea from the Ksava Kabbalah, again without going through inside, but it's a very fascinating idea. The next portion in the Chumash talks about the me'il, the coat that the Kohen Gadol wore, and it says that there were pa'amonim, there were bells on the hem of the me'il. What's that? Yeah, right. They recently found a bell in Israel, right? So. I guess you see the Kohen Gadol was a Belzer Chassid, right? That's what comes out from the Chumash. And it says, V'nishma kolo b'voel HaKodesh. When the Kohen Gadol comes in to the Beis HaMikdash to serve, he'll hear the sounds of the bells. What's the point of all of that? Right? In other words, why should the bells ring, when he goes in to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? right? So he quotes, the Ksav HaKabbalah quotes from the Ramban the following idea. He says, in a sense, the bells are kind of like a Derech Eretz sort of thing. It's not appropriate to sneak up on somebody without their knowledge. If you're a slave coming in before your master, or a minister coming before the king, you certainly knock and get admittance before you come in and present yourself to the king. So too, the Kohen Gadol, when he comes to the Beis Hamikdash, shouldn't just present himself in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has to knock. How do you knock? When he walks, the bells sound, and Kiviyachol HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, made aware of his approaching. So writes the Rambam. Now, I mean, again, obviously this cannot be meant in any kind of literal sense, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need the bells, you know, to know that the Kohen Gadol is approaching. But that's the Ramban's approach. The Ksav HaKabbalah suggests a different approach, a very fascinating approach. He says, we know that the Torah commands every male Jew is supposed to wear tzitzis, because the tzitzis at the corner of the garment remind the person of all the mitzvos which he's supposed to perform. The Kohen Gadol had even more mitzvos and even more chiyuvim than, you know, more things that were on his head than the average Jew. So in a sense, the Kohen Gadol needs an extra pair of tzitzis. Tzitzis appeal to the quality of sight, right? To his vision. The bells appeal to his sense of hearing. The bells remind the Kohen Gadol of all of the mitzvot and the responsibilities that he has as he's going about his daily routine through the mikdash. You know, the tzitzis appeal to one sense, the bells appeal to a second sense. But that's really, he says, that's the yisod, that's the basic idea of the bells. You know, they're not meant for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even in a non-literal sense. They're meant for the Kohen Gadol to reinforce for him that sense of how careful he has to be with the tremendous responsibility which is placed upon him. Okay, now next week we'll be back to the regular Wednesday time. Be'ezus Hashem, wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.